Welcome in, everybody. Mark Farzetti here with the Farzetti Show, presented by Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers. What a weekend in Philadelphia sports. We went from James Harden being Ben Simmons to James Harden being James Harden, and we much rather have James Harden because that's why the Sixers won the trade. The Phillies get off the schneid, which is nice to see, but most importantly, it is now anybody's series. I've been asking, you guys know this, you could put it on repeat because I feel like I have been on repeat. I feel like I have been a broken record, but it is literally where my thoughts have been for the last 3 months. Give me confidence you can make it out of the second round of the playoffs. There's no better way to do that than winning in the second round of the playoffs. And I don't just mean the series overall because it could come down to a game seven. It's at least going to come down to a game six. That's where we're at right now with this playoff series. However, after game three, after watching James Harden, and I will say that I think a lot of people went to top shelf. A lot of people went to top shelf when it came to the James Harden is Ben Simmons comparisons, because I don't remember Ben Simmons hitting threes down the stretch for you in a playoff game. I don't remember that ever happening. I don't remember him having that great possession where he actually got the hustle play under the basket of the Celtics, turned around, found Embiid, Embiid dribbled down the court, had the trailing pass to James Harden and then hit the three. Like, I don't remember that happening with Ben Simmons, but were there plays in game three that kind of reminded you of, looked a little bit like, had some kind of resemblance to Ben Simmons? Sure, sure. But then to people going with the over-the-top hot takes about how he's Ben Simmons all of a sudden, I don't think so. Enter the conversation game four yesterday afternoon in South Philadelphia. That was the game we had been talking about. Look, for 2.5 quarters of play, the Sixers dominated. The Sixers dictated pace of play. The Sixers had every ounce of spacing they needed. They created that spacing for themselves. James Harden played aggressive like we know he can and should play every single night. Yeah, Joel Embiid playing a solid game to that point. Tyrese Maxey was kind of up and down, but defensively speaking, Tobias Harris was there throughout the entire game, playing some solid defense. And PJ Tucker was just the tough SOB that we hope the Sixers acquired in the offseason. And he was every ounce of that in the first 2.5 quarters. Then for about a 10-minute stretch, the Sixers totally forgot how to play basketball. No pick and roll. Turnovers, the Celtics went on a huge run, and the next thing you know, it's a tie basketball game. In the final quarter and overtime period, there were 10 lead changes. It was going back and forth, as Mark Zumoff used to call it. The Sixers and Celtics were on the seesaw. One's up, one's down, and they kept on going back the other way. So it was very frustrating to watch the Sixers get away from what had really worked very well and then also get out-hustled and outplayed in that fourth quarter into overtime, and really the end of the third quarter into overtime. Sixers led by as much as 16 points in this game. With about 8 minutes to go, 7 minutes to go in that third quarter, they were up 15 points. Celtics are a great basketball team. We know they're a great basketball team. We know they got a bunch of guys that can step up. And everybody stepped up, whether it was Jaylen Brown, whether it was Jason Tatum, whether it was Al Horford. Oh, my God. Al Horford making that driving dunk and doing that little shimmy. If the Sixers would have lost that game, I would have lost sleep and had nightmares of Al Horford just shimmying. Anyway. It was bad. It was really bad. You had a couple of big plays there from the Sixers down the stretch, PJ Tucker being one of them, getting that 3-point play and chewing the ear off of Joel Embiid. That was one of the best things I have seen this entire season, because the reason you got PJ Tucker wasn't just for quarter threes and tough defense. It was the fact that he is just a tough man on the basketball court. In a game that can have a lot of boys, PJ Tucker is him. PJ Tucker is that guy. PJ Tucker is the guy that will chew your ear off. He will motivate you. And if he doesn't see you playing at the level he's playing at with that same type of intensity, he's going to make sure that you rise to that occasion. There was a really good scorer that played for the Sixers that was a team leader like that, that didn't like seeing anybody else play either below their potential, below their max, below their pinnacle. And that guy's name was Jimmy Butler. and the Sixers haven't had a guy like Jimmy Butler since Jimmy Butler, and PJ Tucker is the closest thing to that. When it comes to intensity on the basketball court, oh yeah, that's PJ Tucker. And that's what he brought to the table last night. And he even helped you out there with some scoring with that great three-point play, helped nod things up late in the game. And then you saw what the Sixers were able to do in that overtime period. The game-winning play, Joel Embiid, great awareness, phenomenal job of realizing where he was in the court, realizing that he was double-teamed, realizing it was going to be tough to get a call in there, realizing he was probably going to get fouled in there, and then to find James Harden some way, find it to just put that ball within arm's reach. You know, in football, we talk a lot about a receiver having a catch radius. Well, James Harden, full extension with his left arm to catch that pass out of the paint from Joel Embiid. Corner three, catch, release. Jaylen Brown running him down. James Harden lets it fly. Splash. Sixers take the lead. Somehow, some way, they regroup, make it into overtime. You have Marcus Smart miss that three at the end of regulation that would have been the game winner. Comes up just short, clanks it off the front of the rim. You go into overtime, and the Sixers are just able to outlast the Celtics. It was such a great feeling going into halftime, coming out in the third quarter, and seeing the Sixers continue to just dictate every ounce of this basketball game, where it looked like the Celtics were all of a sudden the fundamentally unsound team, the team that couldn't get anything going when it came to the clutch moments or rally style runs, stopping plays from Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart or Al Horford. It was just a totally different game. Sixers were leading everything. And then that midway point of the third quarter, I don't know how you can have so much success in pick and roll offense and then not see pick and roll. I don't know how defensively everyone just has a brain fart and they don't remember their assignments. They can't switch. There's no communication. It was mind numbing. And then after the game, it was explained rather well. You never want to think about this in a playoff game with professional athletes, but their head coach acknowledged it. Doc Rivers just said they were out of gas. For whatever, they just hit a wall in that third quarter and into the fourth quarter where they were just barely able to keep their heads above water. And when you saw that play out, it was scary because, again, you go up 16 points, you're up 15 by the midway point of that the third quarter. And you're thinking the only thing that can really stop the Sixers right now is the Sixers. And you know the Celtics are a talented enough team where they can make a run at any moment. And boy, did they. But that three-point play that I'll go back to, not just with James Harden by hitting the corner three that was the game winner, his second game winner in this series, but that three-point play that PJ Tucker had where he was cleaning up the garbage underneath, right? Another zoom-off reference, turning garbage into gold, and then he makes the foul shot and he knocked things up. It was incredible. And we've been talking about playoff PJ for a long time. The Sixers have needed an edge. The Sixers have needed someone to say, hey, guys, this is the moment that is going to live on in infamy if we don't respond. And I think great coaches do this. I think team leaders do this. And PJ Tucker certainly did it last night. You identify the moment. And I remember Allen Iverson doing this back in the day. This is the moment where they're about to make a run. This is the moment where, in this case, the Celtics are going to make the run. This is the moment where we could take that run away from the Celtics and turn momentum back into our favor. And that moment at that three-point play, physically, tangibly, on the box score, that was the moment. And then emotionally, that was the moment for the Sixers team to realize, okay, this is now our game. The Celtics should have to play catch up to us. We're going to go back to dictating the pace of play. We're going to go back to dictating, you know, that the momentum of this game. This is the moment. And PJ Tucker provided that moment, both tangibly, both when you look at the box score, there it is. That's the moment it happened. And then as the game went on, that was where you saw the momentum shift to the Sixers' favor. Now, I know there's some people out there that are very skeptical. And look, I don't know that this means that all of a sudden the Sixers are going to win this series. If I'm betting on who wins this series, I'm still thinking it's going to be the Celtics, unfortunately. But damn, that doesn't mean that I wholeheartedly rooting to be wrong here. The most optimistic thing that could have happened is obviously tying the series up at two games apiece and knowing that you're not going back to Boston looking to be one game away from elimination. I've been asking the whole time, give me confidence that this team can make it out of the second round of the playoffs. Well, guess what? Now they've at least forced two more games. And that's a good feeling going up against this Boston Celtics team. Because here's what I have learned. Here's what I've discovered with this Sixers team. Good Lord, there are two totally different versions of this team. And I don't know which team is going to show up. Because one team, you look at James Harden as the number one scorer. Which is after game one, especially after game two, I said, that's the way this is probably going to have to go. When Joel Embiid comes out and tells you that he's not 100%, that he was supposed to be out for at least another 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, but yet he's playing, and he had to get that game two out of his way to knock the rust off and learn how he could play. Well, he still played a pretty damn good basketball game. Again, if you look at the box score, but even watching him in the game, he looked great. Fourth quarter, had some concerns with the way Al Horford was going back to that dad strength that he was so known for just a couple of years ago, right before he had joined the Sixers, as a matter of fact. Oh boy, Al Horford was the kryptonite to Joel Embiid. And boy, did he look like it again in that fourth quarter. Coming up with five blocks, just absolutely dominant, driving the lane, hitting a three. Just everything you hated about Al Horford in his first run with the Celtics before he came to the Sixers, he was doing it again. So what do you need? You need those one or two versions of the Sixers. One is the James Harden leading scorer, where he just creates spacing, sets up his team, and just plays an all-around great style of basketball. But the number one thing is the thing that he has done and really made a career out of and an MVP season out of, which is being a scorer. That's a great version of the Sixers. The other is Joel Embiid dominates. That's the other version of the Sixers. That option two, I don't think exists anymore. Not right now. The Sixers have to be more reliant on James Harden to be the number one scorer. They have to be more reliant on James Harden to be the number one facilitator as well. And that's what he did in game one. He got away from it in game two. Certainly got away from it in game three. We can be on the same page there. And game four, good to see you! James Harden, MVP version of James Harden. The version that people told me that didn't exist anymore. And yeah, quite frankly, I didn't have a lot of confidence that he could be that guy. I was hoping that in game one of this series, James Harden kind of rediscovered that 45-point game, kind of the game winner. He kind of rediscovered that, okay, I got to lead the charge here. Joel Embiid comes back, see the way he played. James Harden really needs to be that guy again. Game three, all bets were off. It was ugly, horrible, terrible, whatever. But then in this game, you saw James Harden step up, and you saw him be that scorer that you saw him be in game one. I really think if this series is going to shift in the favor of the Sixers, and if they could possibly find a way to win game five, and then you get back on your home court in game six, anything can happen. We all know that. But I think the only way that really happens is if you get a similar performance from Joel Embiid in this game, and you get James Harden looking to be the scorer that he can be. A guy that the other team doesn't want the ball in his hands in the final seconds of the fourth quarter, in the final seconds of overtime. You don't want that guy dictating the pace of play as he did so well the vast majority of this game four and did throughout game one. But that's what the Sixers need to win. And I'll let you hear it in a little bit, but one of the things that Doc Rivers acknowledged was that James Harden, Tyrese Maxey even, Tobias Harris and James Harden, and Joel Embiid, all four of those guys played their roles really well in this game. Maxey, I thought defensively, especially for a guy that has, I think, taken some steps forward in his defensive capabilities over the last year. Not so much in this game, whether it was Jaylen Brown, whether it was Jason Tatum, whoever drew him, whoever he was matched up with, they were winning a lot of battles in that regard. The one play that really pissed me off, and I know it pissed everybody off, because Marcus Smart got a charge call on Joel Embiid that took points off the board. You go down the other end, Jason Tatum is being guarded by Tyrese Maxey, and if you don't know the play, oh my God, this was atrocious. And it sucks because Maxey got penalized essentially for trying to play tough, strong defense, and Tatum ends up knocking down a three. And Tatum takes a dribble, puts his forearm out, his left forearm out, and shoves Tyrese Maxey without question. Offensive foul, push off. But Maxey, instead of like pulling a Marcus Smart where he flops or exaggerates the call or whatever it might be, he tries to stand his ground. He regains his footing and tries to recover to put a hand in Jason Tatum's face. To no avail, Tatum hit the three. You see Doc Rivers on the trip back down the court to the Sixers offensive end. You see Doc Rivers on the sideline throwing his hands up in the air right at the official who was standing right there for what should have been an offensive foul call. Sixers maintain their composure, end up tying the game, end up taking the lead, and obviously end up winning, as we all know. But that was an atrocious call there. And Maxey, I thought, played great defense in there. And the fact that they did not call the offensive foul is embarrassing. You saw Doc Rivers after the game as well get pretty emotional about it, too, get pretty revved up. When my old friend Dave Uram was asking him about that call, and he goes, well, did you think it was an offensive? He goes, I thought it was and Doc Rivers, commit. Was it an offensive foul? Anyway, it was an interesting play. But everybody played their role. And they played their role perfectly. And I said, going into this series, you're going to need that because the only way you're going to beat Boston is if you get all four of these guys, your four marquee guys and your starting five. And even you can throw in PJ Tucker in that mix, too, when you're talking about the entire starting five. They need to all play their roles well. And a guy that I thought really stepped up as far as being that emotional leader and being that gritty guy that helps put team over the edge. I thought that's really what PJ Tucker was able to give you in this game. And to see the emotion that was charged into this was a spectacular sight. And man, was it a sight for sore eyes. As far as after this game, look, we know, everybody should know that the 76ers, really professional athletes in general, hear the noise outside the locker room. The 2017 Philadelphia Eagles, before they won the Super Bowl, they heard the noise. They were underdogs. They knew it was what. James Harden heard the noise that he was Ben Simmons. I have zero doubt about it. So Doc Rivers, knowing that James Harden likely had a lot of people in his ear, wanted to make sure that James Harden got back to being James Harden and wasn't worried about pleasing everybody else. So Doc Rivers, after the game, talked about what helped get James Harden back into the flow of things.
The biggest difference.
Wrong cut. Mi scusi. Here is Doc Rivers talking about James Harden.
For a day and a half, James had to get himself back. No one did that but James. Film was great. We talked and probably 15,000 other people probably talked to him. But James, I sent him a gospel song, which he'll tell you if you want, but before the game. And, the title of it was Do You Know My Name? And James Harden was James Harden tonight. What's more importantly, Joel was Joel tonight. Tyrese was Tyrese tonight. Tobias was Tobias tonight. That's what we have to have. We can't have one guy. We have to have everyone.
And boy, did they. I went and I listened to that song. You Know My Name. And I'll say this. James Harden talked about it afterwards. He said it was like a 7-8 minute song. I went back. It's an 8 minute song. I'll say slow build that gospel song, as many gospel songs are, but man, the crescendo. Oh, it makes you want to go out there and drop 42 points, tell you that much right now. I know we have criticized Doc Rivers a lot on this program. I know that in our chat, we would affectionately refer to him as Duck Rivers for ducking responsibility. And I've said there have been things that really grinded my gears about Doc Rivers and the way he's coached this year. But this year in particular, I thought he's done overall a very good job. For a guy that's not supposed to get along with his players, for a guy that's not like James Harden isn't supposed to listen to Doc Rivers. James Harden is supposed to be like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, and they're not supposed to like it. Or Blake Griffin, they're not supposed to like Doc Rivers. All those, right? Doc Rivers sent him a song. James Harden listened to the song, and he said, "Let's play it." Said it to the guys, "Let's play it. It's 8 minutes. Oh damn, let's go." And he said, there's got to be some good juju in this song. So Doc sends the song. James Harden sees the running time and goes, that's an eternity. And they play the song. And he goes, got to be some good juju in here. And sure enough, there was. I guess the point of the song is don't forget who you are. In this case, don't forget who you are. Everyone knows who you are. Go out there and be who you are. And that's who James Harden was. He was James Harden. He was James bleeping Harden. And when you look at some of the stats that come off of this game, James Harden is the first 76er. It feels like when we get in these playoff runs, there's two names that are very consistent. One is Allen Iverson. The other is Wilt Chamberlain. But he's the first 76er since Allen Iverson, and he did twice in the 2001 run, did Allen Iverson. James Harden is the first Sixer since AI in 2001 with a 40-plus point performance, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Not too shabby. Not too shabby. Also, Joel Embiid in this game had 30 points, 10 rebounds. It was his 14th such playoff game. Tied for the most in franchise history. I'm gonna assume that it's Will Chamberlain is the guy he's tied with right now. I think that's a safe bet. But overall, there has to be a change, and the change has to be consistent to the point where it becomes the norm. And if the Sixers are going to win this series, James Harden needs to play the way he played in game one and the way he played in game four. That's the version of James Harden. I was talking about the box score a second ago. You look at the box score of game three, you know, 20 plus points, whatever, it doesn't look as terrible. But when you watch the game and you see the style, it does bother you. When you pass up wide open layups or you pass up drives that you could get the end one on like he did with Jason Tatum, but he kicked it out and he found D'Anthony Melton, who actually ended up hitting the three in that game three against the Celtics late in that game in the fourth quarter. That's all great, but if James Harden doesn't play aggressive, if James Harden doesn't play up to that level that we know he can play at, that many doubted he could play at, but now he's shown us twice in the Sixers' two wins in this series that he can play at that level, play at that level every game. Play with that mentality. The shots aren't always going to fall. You're going to have your off nights. You're going to have turnovers. You're going to have issues where you see, oh, James Harden's being too aggressive. I'd rather have the too aggressive James Harden than the passive James Harden. And the passive James Harden is who you saw in game three. The aggressive James Harden is who you saw in this game four against the Celtics. And that's the only way I think the Sixers win this series, is if you have James Harden as the number one threat scoring wise, you have Joel Embiid be that number two guy. And I think that enough will be enough to be able to make up for the discrepancy between the 100% healthy Joel Embiid and the maybe 85-90% version of Joel Embiid that you're getting right now. Because that's how high a level James Harden can play in order to make up for whatever you might be losing here from a banged up Joel Embiid. And as that game goes on, as this game goes on, as this series goes on, I think that you're going to continue to see that level of play from James Harden. Because the other thing you got to keep in mind here is I still don't think that James Harden is like 100% back next year. I don't even think he's like 70% back next year. I think it's getting closer and closer to a toss-up. If they lose this series, I think he's gone. If they win these series, I think there's a good chance he sticks around. But if James Harden at least consistently plays like he did in game one and game four, he's going to go into this offseason with an opportunity to make that money that he was supposed to make last offseason. And then some. If he's putting that 33, 34-year-old body out there and he's still scoring like this, there's a lot of teams that will still ink him to a long-term, or at least if not even a long-term, a lucrative contract. He's playing for a lot of money. And if he has the opportunity here to be the number one guy, then he's going to be making a lot of money for himself going into the offseason. So there's a lot on the line here. And look, that still only benefits the Sixers, at least in the short term, it only benefits the Sixers, because I believe that's the only way you could win this series, is to get James Harden playing at that level. Also, it helps James Harden line his pockets a little bit more. And that's the money side of it. That's the financial side of it. But the only reason I'm even highlighting it is because it's all about motivation. This is a big cog in the wheel of motivation for James Harden to continue to play well. I mentioned earlier PJ Tucker and the way he was able to play in this series, especially in the later stages of this game. I talked about that edge. Marcus Hayes of Inquirer.com was asking Doc Rivers after the game about the motivation of PJ Tucker. He said, you know, you guys hadn't had a tough game like this, a tough win like this, since the Miami series of last year. And Doc Rivers cuts him off in the question and says, yeah, you know why that is? And here's why.
You know, the biggest difference, there was a guy named PJ Tucker on Miami. There's a guy named PJ Tucker on our team now. And he got the offensive rebound and the 3-point play, which was huge for us. And he helps everybody. So that's part of it.
I think that's a huge part of it. I know a lot of people look at this like it's high school Harry BS, but I think it really does matter because no matter where you are, you're an athlete. Whether it's high school, college, or the NBA, it doesn't matter. You're an athlete. And sometimes you need that either kick in the ass to get you going, or sometimes you need that word that makes you realize, no, this is my show. This is me running things. I'm good enough to get this going, or I'm good enough to maintain what we were able to do earlier in this game. And I think PJ Tucker is that guy. PJ Tucker's the guy to identify the moment of change. This is when the Celtics are going to make their run, or this is when we take this game over. And I think PJ Tucker is the guy to do that. One of the things I love hearing is whenever you get a game-winning shot, whether it's a game-winning shot, game-winning touchdown, game-winning goal, whatever, you always love to see how it unfolded. James Harden on his game-winning shot post-game.
It's supposed to be a dribble handoff, but I thought it was a Joel. It's supposed to be a dribble handoff, or he dribble handoff with me, but Jaylen Brown was kind of denying me, you know what I mean? So I didn't want to fight and the clock run down, so I just gave Joel space to do what he did. And he got so far in the paint that I feel like Jaylen Brown wanted to go help, so Joel made an unbelievable pass and, you know, catch and shoot.
That's all you need, baby! That's all you need! Was a great pass. It was a catch and shoot situation. I know they've talked about it throughout the season. It's something that James Harden has really worked on this year, is not just the step back three, which, you know, he's made a career out of. But he also it's something that is obviously he's feasted on for his entire career. But the catch and release three is something that James Harden has been working on all season. He was working on it in the off season. He's worked on it this season. I know Doc Rivers talked about it as well. That's something that's a big part now of James Harden's game. And that knockdown three, that game winning three, was a catch and release three. I know I haven't even acknowledged it yet. I know we all had heart palpitations when Marcus Smart at the end of regulation released that three. And then when he hit the three, that would have been the game winner. As the clock was expiring, we all went, that was too late, right? That was too late, right? Was that too late? It was too late, thank God. Game 5, tomorrow night, 7:30, Boston. Can't wait. In total, I wanted to give you guys some numbers here. I gave you the lead changes. I gave you the Joel Embiid point about the stuff he does. Yeah, you know what's crazy? Yeah. Looking at James Harden as the number one scorer, Joel Embiid still had 34 points in this game, still had 13 rebounds in this game. But when you get a clutch shot, the guy I'm going to is James Harden without question. George Niang, hey, good to see you, buddy. Three threes in the game yesterday afternoon. That was also great. Joel Embiid continued to get to the line. He was 12 of 15 from the free throw line. Tyrese Maxey had 14 points. 6 of 17 shooting, and that is so good. Did hit two threes for you. Tobias Harris, you know, this is where the box score, again, doesn't tell the whole story, but 9 points for him. Defensively, though, I thought he was a lot better than what we have seen. 3 20-point scorers for the Celtics yesterday. Tatum, Smart, and Jaylen Brown. Also, Malcolm Brogdon had 19 points off the bench, including 5 threes. He was 5 of 8 from beyond the arc for the Boston Celtics. 7:30 tomorrow night. See if the series continues to go in the direction of the 76ers. While I am talking about the NBA, we have to talk about what happened with Nikola Jokic yesterday. Now, the Suns won the game, but I believe it was the second quarter of the game last night. There's a ball that goes out of bounds, and this is where it gets crazy. The ball goes out of bounds. It's in the arms of a fan. Okay, if you know the end of the story, you know where I'm going with this, but I'll just say this. It's in the arms of a fan. Joker goes over to get the ball from the fan. The fan's a little hesitant on giving up the ball. The ball ends up getting swatted like 10 rows back into the stands. Joker, with the fan kind of in his face right now, standing at the side of him, Joker gives a forearm shiver to the fan, knocking him down to his seat. Nuggets get the ball back. And Joker walks away. The fan ended up being the fairly newly minted owner of the Phoenix Suns, Matt Ishba, if I'm saying that right. Joker gets a technical foul for shoving the fan. And the Suns go on to win the game. Nuggets lose. That series now knotted up at 2 apiece. Here's my take on the situation. Joker should never shove a fan, regardless of who's there. Even after the game, when they found out who it was, like, I'm assuming they found out who it was after the game. Both Malone and Joker said after the game, they don't care who the person is. If they're sitting there in the court, they're a fan. And that's fair. I get it. In no way, shape, or form should you shove a fan. That fan wasn't posing a threat. That fan wasn't pushing Joker. Oh, Joker said after the game, well, he pushed me, so I pushed him back. He put, at maybe, at worst, the Ishba's hand goes on the hip of Joker, but there's no push. There's no nothing. If anything, the guy's just trying to keep his space. I don't know if Joker felt the hand before he pushed or he just felt the guy in his space and he pushed. You can't do that. You got to get the hell away from that situation. Let the refs get the ball back. You have no business being there anyway. You're trying to get the ball. Doesn't make any sense. It's not like the time is of the essence there. You shouldn't shove a fan. Joker's in the wrong. Ishba, what the hell are you doing? Even if you're a fan or you're an owner, give the ball up. If you watch the play, he doesn't give the ball up. He's like holding it under his arm, and Joker has to pry it away from him. That's stupid. That's inserting yourself into the game. And you know what? You're the owner of the Suns. Do whatever the hell you want for the most part, but that's stupid. Hey, you're going to get a lot of headlines. Everyone's going to know that you're the owner. They'll be like, I thought the Suns, they have an owner now? I thought they didn't have an owner. What happened to the guy that said the thing? He's gone? Oh, no way. Like, people are just learning now who the owner of the Suns is. So, hey, you put your name on the map. Good for you. Hey, you rallied your fans by taking a charge, more or less. If you see the play, he puts his hands up in the air. Like, oh, what? He looked like Marcus Smart, okay? So, there's definitely two wrongs there, but the greater wrong is Joker pushing somebody. That's just stupid. Absolutely stupid. And I think if it's... It's just funny to even think about this. If it's Josh Harris doing that, we actually probably find it funny, all right? But maybe some people would be... And it's just so out of the personality of Josh Harris. That's why it's so funny. It's like a fish out of water comedy. But, like, if Josh Harris is sitting there and he's holding the basketball and Marcus Smart comes over and pushes him, or Al Horford comes over and pushes him. First off, you're pushing a guy, gave him $109 million. But whatever. If he pushes him, we're like, yeah, that's our guy. You get in his face, you get in his cage, man. Rattle him. That's what we're thinking, maybe. I don't know. Maybe we just all find it hilarious. But if you're a new owner and you're like a younger owner, right, maybe it's something that the fans will get riled up over and enjoy, because it looked like they enjoyed it in this particular game. Look, Joker has the greater evil here. You don't shove somebody. Ishba should know better than to hold on. That's just stupid. One guy was a jerk. The other guy was stupid. That's the way I'll remember this play. As I did mention, Joker got the technical. But my take on it is absolutely not. Joker, you don't shove anybody. But I know that'll be the headline. And I know here in Philadelphia, we've got like so much animosity built up over Joker, where it's like some people might not even acknowledge that he's a great player because all we've been doing is talking so much crap on him for 3 years because it's him and Embiid for the MVP race. But if you really try to look at it objectively, look, I don't think anybody hates Joker. I just think they think Joel was better. That's it, right? I'm not looking at Joker and saying that he's some horrible human being or horrible person or whatever. But he was in the wrong. You don't shove anybody. That is just ridiculous. And I'm glad he got teed up. From the other side of it, Ishba is not an angel in all this. It wasn't like he got the ball, set it down, was like, oh, I hope everyone's okay. And then Joker just came over and punched him. Like, no, that's two wrongs certainly don't make a right. Joker's more in the wrong without question. So that's my take on it. I know it's something a lot of people will be talking about today. Let me tell you about Stephen Singer of Stephen Singer Jewelers, the other corner of 8th and Walnut, right there on Jewelers Row. For over 40 years, Stephen Singer's been in the love business in Philadelphia, helping people fall in love and get engaged. How great is that? Stephen Singer Jewelers, one place, one price, the perfect price, online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. Let me tell you about the great people of Manscaped. Manscaped.com, the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Because, fellas, you want to look good everywhere, right? You'll love their Platinum Package 4.0, which is their best hygiene bundle yet. It's incredible. It includes their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, as well as their Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. And they come with skin safe technology that helps you reduce the risk of nicks so you can manscape with confidence and comfort. Join 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Go to manscaped.com. Use promo code Farzy for 20% off and free shipping. How about the amazing people at Freestone Farm CBD? FreestoneFarmCBD.com. You like CBD? You use CBD? How about Freestone Farm CBD at FreestoneFarmCBD.com? You'll love their tropical tasting Bayox that clocks it in a chart topping 24.1% and Super CBD, which is half Hindu. Kush. And 21%. Genetics of these guys are off the charts. So try Freestone Farm CBD at FreestoneFarmCBD.com. How about PHL Sports Station, Philadelphia Sports Station, enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience across all social media and blogs? That's PHLSportsStation.com. Before I get to the chat check, one more thing I got to get into. The Phillies snapped a horrible losing streak. That was not fun. It was the opposite of fun. It was zero fun. They dropped the last game of that Astro series. Bink. They got swept out of the Dodgers series. Bink, bink, bink. And they lost the first two games of this series with the Boston Red Sox. Bink, bink. They dropped six in a row. And game two of this series, I was away. I was away in Baltimore over the weekend for my youngest, my most babyest cousin, the 21 first cousins on my mom's side of the family. My cousin Sean, shout out, man, got married. Beautiful ceremony, beautiful everything, right? And I'm at a bar. I'm at a bar called the Seahorse, which is not in the Inner Harbor. It's in like a Dundalk, right? Sparrow's Point, I believe. A lovely place in case you ever want to check it out. Good times. Right on the water. Beautiful. And I'm looking up at the TV trying to follow what's going on with the Phillies. It's on one of the TVs at the bar, right? And I'm enjoying, I think, my second plate of nachos and crab cakes. And I look up and I see Harper hits his home run. And I go, oh, my God, it's amazing. You know, home run, it's incredible. I go up and see Trey Turner hit a home run. Oh, my God, this is incredible. 7-4, but maybe they're going to come back in this game. You know, I'm trying to follow it, right? See Bailey Falter have the implosion innings, right? All that fun stuff. So I'm following the game as best I can. And I just – I'm literally – pissed off in a different state and surrounded by, you know, loved ones. I'm pissed off that they lost another series. After winning five straight series, they now have dropped two straight series, which is haunting considering the run that they were on. I know that the road ahead is going to be tough because they got a two-game series coming up here with the Blue Jays who are playing. Anybody in the AL East, like even the Red Sox, I don't want to face anybody in the AL East. The AL East is going to be off the charts this year. Again, by the way. So I'm watching it and I'm going through the emotions of like, this just sucks. Like I really wanted them to at least go for the series win on Sunday and you'll be able to enjoy that game and all that stuff. And it just wasn't meant to be. So I'm following the game and I'm pissed off and I'm like really eager to get home and watch the third game of this series and just hope that they salvage the game. And I don't know what it was. I just had this feeling that the Phillies are not a bad enough team to get swept again. Like, I was just like, sometimes you'll just have those moments. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Can't justify it. It's just because personally you're pissed off about where they are. Like, no, they're not this bad. And a lot of times, you know what? You're wrong. They are that bad. But this time around, they're not that bad. And they get the win. And the biggest thing that I saw going into this game, the biggest reason I really started to feel like they're going to win this game is because for, I don't know how long, maybe at least since Harper's been back, it's like a week. I cannot understand for the life of me why Kyle Schwarber was going back to the leadoff spot. And it's not that he's, you know, a 200 hitter. I mean, that really hasn't changed much from last year. It's not so much for me to look at him as not a leadoff hitter anymore as it is for me to look at Bryson Stott and say, absolutely, he is the leadoff hitter. It's not so much that Kyle Schwarber has lost it. It's that Bryson Stott has taken it. And to see Rob Thompson go back to Kyle Schwarber at the top of the order with Bryce Harper back, it makes me think, was there some kind of backdoor deal? Was there some sort of like handshake agreement that, all right, you're not going to lead off when Harper's not back, but when Harper comes back, you're going to lead off again? Look, that's sheer speculation on my part. But for me, I just don't get it. I don't understand how you would again demote Bryson Stott because Harper's back. The obvious thing, the most perfect place for Kyle Schwarber in this lineup right now is for him to be batting fifth behind Nick Castellanos. I said it on Friday after the game on the post-game show on Jacob Media. I said it throughout the weekend. I yelled it at the TV, at the bar in the Baltimore area. No one cares. Who are you talking about? The O's? Who are you talking about? There's no justification for Kyle Schwarber being the leadoff hitter anymore. So I saw the lineup card come out, and I thought to myself, perfect. This is exactly what you need. The best case scenario for this Phillies team. Like, think about it. JT Realmuto as your six-hole hitter. That sounds pretty good. Going through this lineup and going Stott, Turner, Harper, Castellanos, Schwarber, and then having JT Realmuto or Alec Bohm or whoever it might be at that spot of the order is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And you go into this game, Kyle Schwarber was 0 for his last 20 with 8 strikeouts. In this game, it advances to 0 for 21 with 9 strikeouts. And then in his next two at-bats helps the Phillies win the ball game. You watch this game go on. You see the early goings of it made you feel all warm and fuzzy. You see this game. First off, Taijuan Walker pitched a great game throughout, so that was great to see. But the Phillies come up in that fourth inning. They start to really turn things on. Stott, Turner, back-to-back singles to lead off the inning. Then you have Bryce Harper step up with no gloves, works the walk, bases loaded, nobody out. Castellanos, Fielder's Choice, RBI. Devers makes a great tag on Turner in that fourth inning. The Phillies go up 1-0. Then Kyle Schwarber steps to the plate with runners on first and second with one out, gets the RBI single. You're now up 2-0. JT Realmuto makes an out. Bowman makes an out. The inning is over. They get the home run at the top of the fifth inning. The Red Sox do. It's 2-1. And then in the sixth inning, after Bryce Harper gets a single, Harper goes to second on the slow roller by Nick Castellanos, where he grounds out to the second baseman. Schwarber steps up. They make the pitching change. They go to Blyer. Second pitch of the at-bat, Kyle Schwarber belts a two-run home run to right field's upper deck, baby. Goes second tier. 434 feet. 434 feet of comfort in the lineup, as I'll call it. Phillies go up 4-1. They tack on a couple more on JT Realmuto's two-run single in the eighth inning for some insurance. Phillies win 6-1. They snap their six-game losing streak. They get the day off today. They go up against the Toronto Blue Jays tomorrow. So look forward to that series starting. A brief two-game series in South Philadelphia with the dreaded Blue Jays. Yeah, I still say dreaded. Yeah. 30 years after the fact. 30 years. God, that's gross. Anyway, so Phillies will be back in it tomorrow, but nice at least to see them get off the snide, and hopefully they'll be back in action tomorrow with wins. Let's get into the chat check. I'm going to go to the Jacob Media YouTube channel first today. Ah, Just.Teep. What's up, Just.Teep? Nice to see you. Good morning to you. Ooh, that coffee could hit you. Coffee could certainly hit you. PJ needs some coffee. Sean Gillespie, good morning. Justin T, why is it that no big league has been safe? I think you mean big lead. Lead, there it is, yes. No big lead has been safe for the last decade. Brown or Doc, doesn't matter. No lead is safe with this team. It is concerning because you want to be able to close out a game. I know we would all love those warm and fuzzy games or four quarters of just complete dominance. And for the most part, game two was that for the Celtics, where it was close in the beginning and it was like, it was a 14-point game in that third quarter. And then the wheels just totally blew off and the Sixers were terrible. But we would all love to have those laughers. They just, playoff basketball, it's really hard to get a laugher. Sam Fisher, what makes me think that? What makes me think what? Chad, what's up, Chad? Just a tip. I cry thinking about how much better this team would be with Butler, Bridges, and Mitties. Oh, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. Let's jump over to the Farsi Show chat. What's going on, chat checkers? How you guys doing? Sean Gillespie, hello again. Sean Kilrain, what's going on? Oh, my God, the Sixers stay alive for now, unfortunately. Amazing win. I saw somebody said that they have zero. Oh, they are Dan. Dan Schwartz, my man. Nice win. Absolutely zero faith going forward, though. I can't have less faith after they win. So when you think about it, I'm at my highest point right now that the Sixers could win the series. I don't think they will. But in terms of the most confidence that they'll win the series, right now is the highest I've been since game one, right? You can't take a hit confidence-wise after game one. I still don't think they'll win, but I have more confidence that they will. Like on a scale of like 0 to 100, 100%, oh, they're 100% going to advance. Or they're 100% going to get eliminated. Like I'm like 85% sure they're going to get eliminated now. which beats the hell out of the 100%, right? That's where I'm at right now. It might not make sense to you, but it makes sense in my head. You steal a line from Mitch Hedberg, crawl inside my head, and you tell me that doesn't make sense. Anyway, you crawl inside my head, and you tell me that's not funny. Anyway, what do we got? April! Good morning, April. Sean Kilrain, I just sent Harden, Who's the Man, by House of Pain. Let's go. Dan Schwartz, I can't have faith. I can't have faith that Harden is the man. He is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. That's fair. He has been like that. But here's, I know it's tough for me to understand. If you're an athlete and you're an athlete of great ability, like James Harden, how do you not hit that gear? And I'm not saying the production will be there every night with 42, but I'm talking about the style of play, the aggression. Like, to come out in game one, and you can make a rest factor with James Harden that he wasn't going to get, you know, he just needed rest. It wasn't rust, you know, all that stuff. You can make that argument with a guy that has played as much as he has, who has battled an injury all season, like that kind of thing. You can make that argument, but you can't make the argument about the mentality. Like, realizing the type of player that you are, realizing that you could play like that every single night. The production might not always be there. The biggest thing is James Harden is the type of person, and I don't always agree with this, and I know it gets said way too often, and I think it's become way too much of a cliche, but great shooters got to believe the next one's going in. And my argument to that is sometimes you just know you're off, and no matter what you do, it's not there. And the next one's going in. You got to be an unconscious, unforgiving shooter and all that. That's great, but sometimes you got to know when you're not. It's not your night. James Harden is one of those guys that I support when you just keep on shooting. Because if he keeps on shooting, they're still going to have to defend that. And he's good enough with a good enough blow-by rate, which has suffered in recent years. But he's good enough to where if they are going to collapse on him, he can get by him and get to the rim, and he can get fouled, and he can make the baskets. He can go there and make the free throws. So there's great justification for, on nights where he's having an off-shooting night, he can still drive the lane, get fouled, get the free throws. Or he can, I don't know, make the teardrop, or he can make the layup. Maybe he gets the N1. He's a good, or you know what he's got? He's got a kick out when they do collapse on him in the paint. He's a good enough and he's a versatile enough player where he has those tricks in his bag. So to see a version of him, a version of basketball for him that almost looks disinterested in the game, that's unforgivable. Game one and game four, obviously the production was great. It's an easy argument to make. But the fact that he can play like that with that type of mentality every single night just makes me pissed when he doesn't. The 42 points is not always going to be there. But 25, 30, that could always be there. That kind of production could always be there with that style of play. Setting up his teammates, kickouts, no doubt. That can always be there for James Harden. And that's what I want to see going forward and coming up. In game five in Boston, you're going to have to see that same type of mentality. And you're going to have to see that same type of production from him. And to hear Joel Embiid talk about, Joel Embiid said after the game that he sucked and he dropped 34 points. Maybe he's referring to Al Horford's five block shots, because that can't feel good. But if 34 points, 34 points, 13 rebounds is him sucking. And he was 11 for 26 from the floor, so you can't forget about that either. But if that's him sucking, then all right, go ahead and suck as long as James Harden is awesome. I think as time goes on in this series, I don't think you're going to see, you know, for the next two games, I do think there'll be, you know, there's at least two games. And the Sixers coming out tomorrow night, is going to really dictate my mood over the next couple of days here. But I think the guy that has to be the difference maker is the guy that you paid a whole lot of money to that doesn't give you a lot of production during the regular season. He was good during the last couple of weeks of the season. But a guy that I think is going to be a huge difference maker here is James Harden's got to realize the way he can play is the way he can play every night. Joel Embiid needs to be some version of that MVP, of course, on the 85% version of that MVP. Harris, Maxey need to score, need to play defense, all that stuff. But P.J. Tucker, I said it before the series, I said it going into the playoffs, a difference maker for this team is P.J. Tucker. Because he was a guy you brought in to have that edge. He was a guy that you brought in that isn't used to losing. This is a guy that's used to winning. It's a guy that has a championship ring. This is a guy that wants everybody else to make sure that they're matching his intensity. And to see him getting in the ear of Joel Embiid last night was a beautiful thing. this Sixers team, I don't feel great about their odds of winning this series, but I haven't felt better than their odds since game one. That's all you can ask for at this point. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be pretty. The Celtics are a better Celtics are a better, deeper team than the Sixers. And you want to know why you're not confident in the Sixers winning? It's not just because the Celtics have had their number. It's because the Celtics are a better team. Sixers can play better basketball, and they can advance. And, man, the road that's in front of them, Knicks, Heat, the road that's in front of them means they could be an NBA Finals team. The Sixers are two wins away right now, two wins away from us having a lot of confidence in them making it to an NBA Finals. Look, it's 2-2 in the semis. It's 2-2. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but that's what's down the line. Sixers continue to play the way we know they can play. They get that kind of play from James Harden. They continue to get what they've been getting from Joel Embiid, and they get other guys in this lineup continuing to step up. And yes, you're going to be staring at the NBA Finals. This is, in my mind, the Eastern Conference Finals already. Winner of this series, I believe, is going to go on to the NBA Finals. That is what is so frustrating about the struggles you see the Sixers have. Get past this series, get a win in Boston, steal another one, and then we'll be talking about the NBA Finals. It's just that close. It's just that close. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. You guys are great as per usual. Oh, Sammy. What's up, Sammy? How do we keep motivated, Harden? Gospel music? Who's going to have more brain farts as a coach, Missoula or Doc? Daquan. What's up, Daquan? Harden got both these wins. I hope so. I hope. Hey, we talk about baseball a lot when you're struggling in a series and you got your ace going the next day. It's like, yo, everyone settle down. I got this, right? Hopefully Harden's got this. Thanks to everybody in the chat. You guys are fun as per usual. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow. Hey, bonus me, Fox 29, coming up 7:40 this morning. Have a great day, everybody. See you guys tomorrow morning. See you then. James Hyde approves the program. Did a wonderful job. I'm Mark Farzetta. This is The Farzee Show. Make sure you guys subscribe to the Jacob Media YouTube channel and Farzee Show YouTube channel as well. And always for the people on the podcast, thank you so much. Had a great weekend. See you guys. Bye.